Thank you for joining us for another episode of Baker Hosts Ad Nauseam, a podcast series focusing on new and trending advertising issues with an emphasis on the FTC and the NAD. I'm Randall Reuben King, and you're listening to Baker Hosts. We are once again joined by Amy Mudge and Daniel Kaufman, two partners from Baker Hostetler's advertising, marketing, and digital media team. Together, they have decades of advertising experience and approach advertising issues from multiple perspectives. On today's episode of Ad Nauseam, Amy and Daniel are back to discuss claims regarding safety and risk reduction in advertising. With that, welcome to Ad Nauseam, and let's turn it over to Amy and Daniel.
And welcome back to Ad Nauseam. Thank you so much for joining us. We are happy to be here talking about our narrow universe of advertising issues and basically trying our best to ignore the rest of the world. Great topic for you today, safety claims and claims about risk reduction. And this is an issue often addressed by both the FTC and by NAD.
Yeah, Daniel, it is hard to feel safe these days about just about anything, but we will not be tackling that. But as opposed to safe, when I hear safety, I think of one thing.
S-S-S-S-A-A-A-A.
F-F-F-F-E-E-E-E.
Okay, Amy. One of my all-time favorite one-hit wonders, of course, that is Men Without Hats and the Safety Dance, bringing us back to the 80s, but it brings us back to the topic of the day, and that is favorite one-hit wonders. What are you thinking?
All right. Anytime you're a little nervous with the world, this is an awesome place to go. Awesome place to go. Before I tell you my answers, I'm a little nervous here because a lot of things people say are one-hit wonders actually are not. All right. Like, I've heard people say Whip It by Devo is a one-hit wonder. Nope, not at all. Devo was an awesome band with a cool catalog. But I'm going to throw out some, and Daniel, tell me if I'm wrong. Modern English, I Melt With You, and A-ha, Take On Me.
Okay, I feel like A-ha had at least a second song, and I remember playing it a lot on the radio when I was a DJ in college.
Daniel, I totally knew you were a DJ in college. You just have that vibe about you. Whenever you bring out nerdy stuff, I'm going to be like, no, go back to your inner DJ. All right, so there's another one that I was going to throw out there that I know is a one-hit wonder. Who Let the Dogs Out? And I just, it's very catchy. It makes me smile. The only place you hear that song these days is in ad campaigns, which of course we love. But here is my last effort, okay? Rob Bass, all right? It Takes Two. It takes two to make things go right. And here's why I know that is a one-hit wonder. I saw Rob Bass perform at a wedding, okay? When you perform at a wedding, you only got the one song. Am I right?
I've got a few favorites, and you know, and it pains me to say this, but Tainted Love by Soft Cell. I think they were sort of a one-hit wonder, even though it is a remake, which is also sort of fascinating. That song, Tainted Love. Oh. Delight's Groove Is in the Heart, which though I listened to the album a million times, I think that was their only big hit. We got Frankie Goes to Hollywood with Relax. Again, another album I played to death in the 80s. And finally, you know, I'll bring us back to the 70s, Minnie Riperton with Loving You, and you know who she is the mother to.
I do not, and you're going to have to hum that song or preferably sing it.
I cannot sing it because it's like seven octaves above my singing voice.
Okay.
But Minnie Riperton, Maya Rudolph's mom, apparently.
Okay, well, she's got to be funny too.
You know that song, Loving You, It's Easy Cause You're Beautiful.
Oh, see, that was great. That was great. You brought it down and I took, all right. Look, we could literally discuss these songs for hours. And I do think our gift to you should be when you leave this podcast, please go think about what your favorites are and listen to them. But duty calls, let's kick it off on safety claims with the first FTC case. And I got one that's pretty recent, a couple years ago, 2018, against an auto dealership. And I gotta say, doing this podcast for like 2 years with you, Daniel, it's really highlighted the number of important and significant cases the FTC has brought involving the auto industry. But in this particular case, the FTC alleged that a group of car dealerships had sent out more than 21,000 fake recall notices to consumers in order to get them into the dealership.
So maybe not the best strategy, and the FTC press release noted that, quote, deceptive fake recall notices may not only trick consumers into visiting a dealership, but also may cause them to, of course, ignore legitimate recall notices in the future, risking their safety.
And to be clear, these notices, as the FTC alleged, were labeled urgent recall notice. And they even used the same color scheme, allegedly, as the official recall notices that were then required by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which, you know, today there'd be a second count there, right? It would probably be deemed a violation of the imposter rule. But look, there was no attempt to limit the distribution to consumers whose cars were actually subject to open recalls. And here the FTC went not just after the dealerships, but also the company founder and also the marketing company that helped put this campaign together for them. So, you know, an important warning. Certainly the more egregious the allegations, the broader the scope of liability the FTC is going to cast.
Yeah, and let's be clear, this wasn't sort of a one-time oopsie where somebody got carried away. You know, the FTC emphasized that the company did an initial distribution of this notice and got a lot of complaints, quite a lot of them. But it was successful, and they decided, let's do a second distribution. Now, of course, it's real important to get legitimate recall notices to consumers with actual legitimate recalls, but not a great idea to do this as part of a broader marketing campaign. Good reminder also, of course, to pay attention to your complaints.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so have we ever done a podcast where that is not one of the lessons? That should just be the overall umbrella. Yeah, that. But anyway, so message number one here, don't muck around with legitimate safety issues. And I guess message number two from us is going to come from a pair of cases from 2002, which was not long after we had major anthrax scares after 9/11. And, you know, look, whether it's anthrax, Ebola, COVID, swine flu, or any of many other health scares we have seen and continue to see, this is an area the FTC will always focus on. I will go to the mat about that. Probably if there is one non-political issue, it's got to be this. And, you know, we have seen cases in all these areas.
Amy, the way you just rattle off just a few of the health scares or crises of the past few decades is kind of terrifying. And, you know, don't forget, we've also got West Nile virus, Zika, and now measles. But anyway, so we had the major anthrax scare, and the FTC went after an online seller of colloidal silver that purported to treat anthrax, as well as a home test kit that promised to detect the presence of anthrax bacteria and spores. And needless to say, the FTC, not happy with the substantiation of both products, and they got settlements in both cases.
Although I like to think that all of our dozens of podcast listeners would never do something like that, take advantage of a national health and safety crisis. It is important to be careful if you're doing any sort of campaign related to any sort of public safety issue. You know, we saw that a lot with COVID, not the kind of companies that were going overblown with COVID cures, but things that kind of, you know, certainly mentioned COVID or were focused on COVID. And, you know, it's really important to get these kinds of things right.
Yeah, absolutely. And Amy, we had another interesting case that I guess I would describe this one as car adjacent. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah, this is another really interesting one. This was one, actually, I don't want to say my favorite cases, but it was definitely up there. This was one of the few smartphone accessory cases. And this one involved an accessory. I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but I'm laughing. it's a great idea, actually. If it actually worked, oh my gosh. But you would blow into it and it purported to register your blood alcohol content. Okay. It also claimed to have government lab grade testing. You know, nothing like a wild night out. And then you use this advice to see if it's safe to get behind the wheel.
Yeah, this is somehow making me really thankful for taxis and rideshare companies. In the press release, former FTC Bureau Director, the one and only Jessica Rich, wisely noted, people relied on the defendant's products to decide whether it was safe to get behind the wheel, and overstating the accuracy of the devices was both deceptive and dangerous.
That might be one of the few Jessica Rich statements that actually kind of underplayed it here. I mean, really, it is, like I said, I was laughing, but there's nothing funny about this. But all right, let's dial it back from the fairly outrageous cases and talk a little bit about what the FTC had to say about safety claims specifically in the health products claim guidance document. We've certainly talked about that, you know, in detail before, but it's got so many important nuggets in it. And this was, of course, issued in late 2023. And, you know, we often see safety claims in connection with health claims.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there is some discussion of safety there, as well as a few interesting examples. So first up, we've got safety issues that may arise when you have to disclose qualifying information relating to any claim you might be making or how consumers might ordinarily use your product. And of course, advertisers may need to remind consumers of significant safety concerns, even if they aren't making any sort of affirmative representation about safety.
And that can be a really big deal. The FTC guidance provides a hypo on point with an example involving an energy drink. And the hypo is, if consumed over an extended period, it could result in a significant spike in blood pressure. And the guidance says, even absent any representation about the product's safety, a marketer should disclose this potential serious risk.
And in a second hypo, we've got a botanical supplement that was marketed as a sleep aid for when life stresses you out or you're too anxious to fall asleep. And the hypo notes that alone, there is no safety risk for the supplement, but the product can interfere with the efficacy of prescription meds that are used for anxiety and depression. And given that specific claim, the FTC notes that the potential interaction in this case should be disclosed.
And of course, more generally, the guidance expressly notes that generally speaking, claims relating to safety do require a relatively high level of scientific substantiation. And in particular, if product safety might be a concern, you want to make sure that a study you're conducting would be of sufficient size and duration to detect potential side effects. Something to keep in mind if you're designing or using a study specifically to make safety claims.
Yeah, and there is quite a lot about safety there. There's also a discussion about the potential for ingredients to interact with a hypo that notes you've got an advertiser that wants to make claims about an energy drink that helps increase alertness safely. It's got two active ingredients, each of which has central nervous system stimulant effects. And the advertiser compiles well-conducted clinical studies showing that each of the ingredients individually is safe, effective, and causes no significant side effects at the recommended dose. But the FTC notes studies on the individual ingredient might not be sufficient to substantiate a safety claim about the combination product because the two active ingredients together may affect the body differently than they do individually. The FTC notes the advertiser would have to have a study on the actual product if that's what experts in the field would generally require.
That is a high burden, all right? That is, let's just pause there. That ingredient studies, the FTC is saying, in safety claim cases might not be enough. Now, they got that caveat about, you know, what experts agree, but that is, that's really potent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, the NAD has lots more to say on substantiation. There have been a bunch of cases involving trampolines that the NAD has said safety-related claims typically should be supported by competent and reliable scientific evidence, typically in the form of controlled testing, yielding results that directly related to performance.
And that reminds me of an old Simpsons episode when Homer came home with a trampoline, but I guess that is for another day. You know, the green guides also touch on safety as well. And for environmental claims, in the context of a non-toxic claim, the FTC has said that that better be the case, not just for people, but also for pets and the environment before making such a claim.
You know, and NAD has reaffirmed this in multiple cases involving cleaning products. You know, but last year they actually looked at a case where personal care products were advertised as safe. And they were when they were used as directed. Say you couldn't, you know, drink the products, but perfectly safe to use them on your body. And in this case, the NAD said that was acceptable. And you actually didn't even need to qualify when used as directed. But I would say in general, if you have a product that is safe when used per the instructions, but could be misused, it's a good idea to add that when used as directed qualifier. I don't want to get in my soapbox, but it's not just about truthful marketing. But when you're talking about actual health and safety risks, companies really, I mean, they want to err on the side of caution.
Absolutely. And speaking of NAD, they had a real focus the end of last year and this year as well on cosmetic claims targeting teens and kids.
All right, indeed. And, you know, generally for performance claims, the FTC and the NAD are going to require you to have testing on the population you are targeting for your claims. All right. And for safety claims, in a case involving Drunk Elephant Cosmetics, there were claims that the products were safe for kids and teens. But this claim was based on safety testing of adults. All right. And in this case, the NAD still found the claim supported. Why? Because the method used while testing on adults examined and concluded specifically there shouldn't be a difference when testing in a younger audience. And an expert actually concluded that at least for skin and absorption on the skin, there's no difference between adult skin and younger skin. And then further, the accepted industry standards were the same for this product for kids and adults. But in general, unless you have great bridging evidence like this, you're going to want to test safety claims in a very broad population.
So, Amy, my takeaway there is that you and I have the same skin as teenagers. Is that correct?
I think it's the same skin as a baby's bottom, Daniel.
Excellent.
I think that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Oh, there are days I look in the mirror and I'm like, "What happened? How did this happen?"
Daniel, they're not talking about performance. They're talking about safety.
Okay, good to know.
Safety. But one last point from NAD is NAD's also said that health and safety claims should be supported by actual product testing that conform to industry standards. And in another recent case involving a Garu Nada whitening strips, the advertiser there relied on published industry studies of the safety of hydrogen peroxide in whitening strips. The NAD noted, however, that there were also some studies that showed such products were not safe for enamel in some circumstances. And basically, they said the advertiser here had to discontinue its enamel-safe claims without having actual use testing on its own product.
Interesting. So let us wrap this up with maybe a few key takeaways. First, safety claims are a real big deal. They are incredibly important to consumers, and regulators are watching them closely. So really make them cautiously. Second, if you're making health claims, be mindful of any potential safety issues and whether you may be obligated to make safety disclosures regardless of the claims that you're making. And finally, you know, make sure you aren't marketing your products in a way that could potentially raise real safety issues for consumers. Again, regulators are watching this space really closely.
And with that, thank you so much for hopefully safely joining us for another episode of Ad Nauseam. We hope to see you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Amy and Daniel. If you have any questions for Amy or Daniel, their contact information is in the show notes. For more information on the latest developments in ad law, visit our Adventures in Law blog at www.adventures-in-law.com and check out all Ad Nauseam episodes by subscribing to Baker Hosts wherever you get your podcasts. As always, thanks for listening to Baker Hosts. Comments heard on Baker Hosts are for informational purposes and should not be construed as legal advice regarding any specific facts or circumstances. Listeners should not act upon the information provided on Baker Hosts without first consulting with a lawyer directly. The opinions expressed on Baker Hosts are those of participants appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the firm. For more information about our practices and experience, please visit bakerlaw.com.